Welcome to the MEP podcast, where I'll be exploring the intersection of sport and spirituality through a variety of practices that ultimately invite us to learn, grow, and connect. I believe that through movement and mindfulness, we can create an awareness within that will allow us to integrate as individuals and connect more deeply to our mind, body, and spirit, together navigating a way to the way. On this episode of the podcast, I speak with Michael Washington, one of the founders of USOL, a one-year-old brand and company that's really inspiring a shift and evolution in outdoor community, outdoor education, and really exploring what you can do and what you can be a part of around Los Angeles. His story is really inspiring to me. I think the way that he's approaching not only this brand, but his life with curiosity and introspection, and really using nature as a beautiful sounding board and collaborator for this experience and journey, really opened my eyes and reminded me of how to be creative, listen and asking questions. And I just found it a really interesting podcast and just interesting to listen to Michael. So I hope you enjoy this episode. All right. Thanks for jumping on, Michael. I'm stoked that you got back to me and excited to kind of learn a little bit more about yourself and USOL project and everything you got going on.
Thanks, man. I'm happy to be here and doing this with you. And it's cool to transition to this from the running workshops that you're doing. So that was a fun introduction. So yeah, thanks for having me.
Yeah, no, it was cool to meet then. And I didn't, really know what you had been up to and what was going on. And I guess that was almost a year ago, probably.
Yeah.
Like 10 months. And yeah, just seeing what's unfolded and what you've been building it's been really cool to see kind of from afar. And obviously our friend Rio was involved.
Yeah.
I think that's what kind of was like, oh, what's this?
Totally. Yeah. That was right around 10 months ago is pretty much when, right around the start. So I don't know if it was, had already been started by the time we were doing those running events. However, it was right in that kind of lane when I was, hoping to get this thing off the ground.
Yeah, for sure. Well, let's jump into a little bit about yourself, I guess. I'd love to hear kind of where you grew up, background.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Were you playing sports? What was going
on? Yeah, of course. So I grew up in Texas. So I was born in Houston. My parents split when I was like one or two, and then I moved to San Antonio, Texas, where I, predominantly grew up, spent my, elementary through high school years with my mom in San Antonio. Texas is just big public schools, right? So my first kind of introduction to sport was through soccer. It was my, passion from when I was probably elementary school through up until kind of like high school. In middle school was when, you kind of get to a larger kind of ecosystem. And part of that, you are very much kind of inspired to kind of do what's cool a little bit. So being in Texas, I think you can imagine, football was the thing. So I kind of just jumped right in and kind of forcibly made myself good at it. I wouldn't say it was something that was naturally, the best sport for me, but it was something I did love to play. And so played that all through my middle school and high school years, to the point where, got a lot of opportunity and offers to carry that on into college, and decided against it. It was the kind of thing where I loved playing and I loved the sport, but I also loved the idea of kind of starting my life. And I think like being 18 and I feel lucky looking back to have been able to have that foresight, because I feel like it's just a big decision to give an 18-year-old, obviously it's like very, very little odds that it's going to create a career for you. And so it was just kind of for me, going on some of these kind of school visits, being faced with basically just kind of like, is it a yes or is it yes? You know, there wasn't really opportunity for discussion in a lot of some of the visits that I went on. You know, through grades, and I think for me, I had a ability to go to college, right? So I felt, you know, I was definitely in a privileged position as opposed to like some of the people that I was going on these visits with. So it was just, you know, it was kind of like a no-brainer for most. And I think for me, I had the option. So yeah, I decided to kind of put that away and hang that hat up, you know, coming out of high school. But growing up in Texas really wouldn't take anything back. Just feeling, you know, part of this kind of small town community vibe, makes you appreciate, you know, life in a way where it's kind of like the slower pace kind of thing. And I think, you know, obviously now where I live in a place that's very different, I would say like those being able to kind of look back and know that my life kind of started where it did and then has kind of progressed to where it is now. That kind of, yeah, that lineage and kind of progression, I think has always felt natural. And I felt ready for this and moving here. And however, I, you know, still have very much kind of like held on to a lot of, you know, the traits and things of my past, right? And so yeah.
Yeah, that's cool. Well, I'm curious, one, what position you played,
Okay.
and then I'm from Canada, so like we pretty much, especially on the West Coast, there's no football, like no American football. So like, the whole Friday Night Lights thing is like very romantic and this vision through TV and movies
What's
and stuff.
funny is like that was, it's so funny to say, but that was like pretty on point with my experience in high school. It was the entire world stopped when there was a football game. The day of, the school would create this like basically like parade celebration with the band and everything before school started. Stage talking about, you know, we're gonna kick their ass tonight, you know, think, you know, everyone screaming the whole day, you know, teachers being easy on you. To when you're about to get ready for the game, which is not which you leave for the game before school ends. So, but everyone gets out allowed to be at, sent out of class for when we're all leaving to the game, and they create a like human tunnel from the locker room to the bus with everyone from the school. So just to cheer you on, it's pretty funny looking back. It was a very like weird time. Makes you, yeah. I played all of defensive positions. I loved, I returned kicks and stuff like that. I was really fast. Which kind of I think they always wanted me to kind of move to offense, but I was just really good at defending people. So anything from cornerback to like safety, strong safety, and even kind of like a little bit of like outside linebacker. Just kind of like a flex, kind of like rush to quarterback, but also can cover kind of person. But yeah, that's the position I played. And yeah, it was a funny time.
Yeah, it is funny. Even you just sharing that, like it was a much smaller scale, but when I was in high school, like basketball was a big thing. Like Steve Nash had gone to our high school, so it was like
Oh, wow.
intense program to some degree. So I remember like Fridays, we had uniforms and stuff, and like all the players would wear like our number ones on Friday. The teachers would be, all right, like go get them and stuff, and didn't have quite as much, no human tunnels, but
Yeah.
it's kind of funny too, because like for a 16, 17-year-old, the like ego pump of like
Oh yeah.
you guys are like above all the other students,
Absolutely. I mean that's kind of one thing that I take away from those times is like, yeah, like what, why were we so, the football team, football was just like, you know, held to this kind of like pedestal versus all the other sports when our football team was terrible. Like we were not that good. Like we won games, but we were not that good. And for instance, like I was best friends with always like the soccer players were like my best friends. That was kind of like my people I hung out with, and they were amazing. They'd always go to playoff, and we would go to the games. People would go to the games, but it wasn't like the school would just like stop for them, you know. And even when they're like in the playoffs, so I think it's definitely location based, you know. For Texas, it's football, you know. That's just what it's always going to be. For say you grow up in Indiana, like it's going to be basketball or something like that. So I think it's always just kind of like, yeah, built into the kind of the history of like where you are. But yeah, the ego pump I think also lends itself well, or lends itself into, you know, people kind of crashing and burning, you know, post high school. It's like, you know, you're the man 3 months ago, and then 3 months later, you don't know what you're doing with your life. And that can be scary if you don't kind of have the right kind of head on your shoulders. And it's hard to have that when you're, you know, so young. And I think it, you know, for me, it goes, for my scenario, you know, it goes back to my mom, what she instilled in me, kind of like the traits that she instilled in me. I would say that was what led me to be able to kind of like, not fall victim to those moments, search for more, know that there's more out there. Which, you know, not no back then there wasn't really internet or, you know, phones or ways of kind of seeing, you know, farther than your kind of like somewhat insular community. So it was definitely a gamble and a lot of the unknown of what's possible of what I wanted to do. And but I just kind of, you know, felt that, you know, getting out of Texas, at that point was just kind of the only thing I knew was going to be the right move. And even that was hard because a lot of people in Texas, they don't leave Texas. It's kind of, you know, the Lone Star State, is the mentality. I remember one time telling a friend who I went to high school with that I was going to college at University of Colorado in Boulder. I was like, yeah, I'm going there. And they're like, why would you leave Texas? Like, what do you do? And I just remember just being like, that is why. Exactly. Like what you, the way that you basically responded to that is why I'm leaving Texas. So yeah. Yeah.
Well, I think, I mean, obviously, like you mentioned, your mom like instilling some level of confidence in yourself to be able to make a choice to not go play football, leave Texas. Were there experiences you had that like kind of allowed you to see beyond that? Did you travel at all, or like
I mean,
I mean, because
I
like
yeah,
what?
go
Sorry.
ahead. No, you good.
Like you said, like, you know, people stay where they grow up, right? It's comfortable if they don't have their like horizons expanded or hinted that there is more, like you said. Though it's hard to do that just on your own.
I would say it came from not really ever feeling like I fit in. And so it wasn't that necessarily like I had perspective on what was out there. I just knew what was around me wasn't really where I fit in. And I think it mainly at the time came from more of a cultural kind of point, not only with things that I was seemingly being kind of more inspired by, things that were maybe more creative than most of my peers, but also just when I was growing up, there wasn't really anyone around, definitely not around me, but also just in pop culture or just like anywhere that looked like me. So being like a mixed kid, half black, half white, I didn't really know what that meant. I didn't know how to act. I didn't know how to be perceived, was or how I, yeah, people didn't know how to perceive me. And I was always constantly like battling how to like kind of like showcase who I am. And then through it, just kind of had to learn that who that person is, has to kind of like come from within, and it's not going to be, you know, trendy, or you're not really ever going to really be able to relate, to people around you, in that kind of way, in terms of, you know, like brotherhood or this and that, right? So, forging your own path literally meant, you know, leaving and continuing to find that journey, which I'm, you know, I would say I'm still on, right? But, I just knew that the right move was to kind of like see what more is out there. Not necessarily that like I had seen that. I just knew that kind of, for me to kind of continue understanding a bit more about, you know, who is Michael Washington and my identity and how do those things kind of work together? It would be to kind of create more experiences for myself that continue to kind of make me think and rethink. Right. So yeah.
Yeah, no, that's cool. So you went to college in Colorado, and then from there, did you come out to LA?
Yeah, so I went to college in Colorado for 4 years. In high school I was already very deeply looking at music in a way that I never played instruments, but I just remember always being like the nerdiest, like feeling the nerdiest when I was, discovering music. So music discovery would lead me to kind of go on deep dives into artists, their lives, who worked on records, things like that, and just learning as much as I can about things that seemingly no one really cared about. And then being able to kind of be on the forefront of understanding where kind of music was going was something that started when I was in high school through at the time burning CDs for my friends and using, all the crack websites to download music illegally but just staying kind of up and relevant on things that were even happening back then. Transition to when I went to college, I wanted to continue, not only finding music for my friends, but what's the next kind of generation? And this makes me sound so old, but it was like right around when kind of like music blogs and blogs were becoming a way where you can display or showcase whatever it is, thoughts or this and that. And so I was like, I want to start a music blog and I want to write about music. I want to be, I want to critique. I have this like passion for discovery, knowing kind of like what is kind of forecasting trends. Now I should learn how to report. So I'm gonna get a journalism degree so that I can, better suit this dream of, which really at the time was just, I just wanted to work with artists and I didn't know that yet. I really, to be honest, never, I didn't really love the writing part. Like I really like storytelling. That has always been the case. And that's kind of like even leads into what I do now. So storytelling was always a thing, but see the, but with, instead of with words, I think I realized that I enjoyed finding ways of being on the kind of like story making side rather than reporting. So in college I started a music website blog that got enough notoriety within the kind of scenes that I was kind of bubbling in, to where when I'd be able to go back home to Texas, South by Southwest, I would be, pretty much every year I'd be able to kind of meet a lot of people that I was, building communities with through the internet, and then be able to kind of put a face behind that and create these relationships through people coming to my home state, where I had a little bit of a leg up in knowing where to go, what to do, where to stay, gigs to book, all that kind of stuff. So it kind of helped me kind of create these relationships while I was still in college. And I was doing internships in New York, just kind of, I thought New York was where I was going to move. Like I just, yeah, I was just kind of doing everything I could. And then, and moved to, I mean, also that being said, while I was in college, like it wasn't something that I was super self-aware or cognitive of in the time because everyone was doing this, but I was exploring nature in a way that, I'm in Boulder, Colorado, right? So I'm smack dab in one of the, the most beautiful states in our country, and very much so using that to my advantage and doing a lot of these sports active activities that I was already kind of doing in Texas, I'm not gonna lie, but it just kind of like took that to the nth degree. But again, I wasn't so focused on it because everyone there was doing it. It was kind of it's the language of living in that state. So it wasn't something that one felt super unique, or two felt like it was a huge part of my life. I was just so heavily focused at the time to like make it out of Colorado and make it to somewhere like New York or LA to work in the music industry. And so I did. I was able to move to LA and very quickly started working at a music management company with a few of my peers that I had been kind of already in touch with that were similar age. And we kind of just put our heads together and started this management company with a few of the artists that I had already been kind of, somewhat, doing free PR for years, right? And it ended up working out. Things kind of took off for certain artists at that time that we were working with, and it turned into a 10-year, around a 10-year career for me, from moving to LA, which I've been in LA for 11 years. So it turned into, music industry, working music for 10 years, which was, I look back as really amazing. It's like the things I was able to do, places I was able to go, people I was able to meet were, some of the best experiences of my life. However, looking back, it's like when I started from that kid in college, just kind of like trying to build community through the internet, there was more community, there was more opportunity for that. Things like blogs, things like the South by Southwest, the kind of smaller shows or scenes could be more kind of insular and not be so attached to a Spotify or Apple Music where everything is now on the same playing field. It definitely allowed for more kind of communal kind of like opportunity. And then coming to the 10-year end of my time in the music industry, I think that's what really where my heart kind of left was that I was looking back and it just felt like I was working for, the man, kind of like Apple and Spotify Music, right? I was basically doing all this work just to, give it to this platform. It just didn't feel like there was much fulfillment from that anymore. And I think, I'm transitioning into kind of what I do now, but like that was, those kind of thoughts really came to fruition when the rat race of everything slowed down or complete came not even slowed down, came to a complete stop in 2020. That's when I was able to really objectively be like, wait a minute, do I even like what I'm doing? And it's okay, well then what do I like? And then I got this camper van. Maybe I should just go on a weekend trip. Okay, maybe this weekend trip is going to turn to a week, man. Let's keep going. And then, through those experiences on the road and through sharing those experiences, kind of like for somewhat the first time, I started to kind of like come up with this kind of idea. And so that's kind of where the kind of like early stages, and that was in 2020.
Yeah, no, that's cool. And I mean, that's awesome that you used that stopping of the sort of norm in 2020 to reflect in that way. I feel like a lot of people did that, and a lot of people, weren't willing to look at what was going on in their lives. But yeah, so much of what you just shared like really resonates with me too, because I started a blog talking about music and fashion and streetwear, and it evolved into like my magazine. And then by the end of it was like, okay, this
Yeah.
landscape is way different than it was
Totally.
8 years ago, or something like that. But yeah, even talking about downloading music off like weird
Oh
web
no.
stuff,
Right.
that just like took me back. I used to spend so much time on this website called Boxedin, and they would just like, you could always get like the album before 2 weeks before it came out.
Exactly. I mean, it's terrible for the music industry, but at the same time, it was those were the years, and I think like to me it was just I look back at a time where, I think the fans and the artists were more in control of the kind of like where the industry was going, whereas now it just feels less controlled by the artist and fan, if that makes sense. And is a bit more sec the artistry and kind of the community component of relationship between artist, fan, location, that's all kind of secondary. It's not really, it doesn't really matter. It's like color to, what is going to provide, the best, I guess, financial like opportunity.
Yeah. It's like there was an intimacy that kind of got watered down.
Yeah, I mean artists could survive, in Seattle, right? Like if you were like a band in Seattle and you were signed to a certain label, like that's all you need. You didn't need to kind of compete with Taylor Swift, right? And so now it's like everything being on the same level, you're asking, new artists that just, got his first signing to compete with artists that has been doing it for 20 years and has millions of more dollars than that person. and they're competing for the exact same spots. And those spots are have dwindled in terms of like the financially viable career, scenario. Like there's not many spots available to be able to be making a living in that model, in the model that we're currently in. So it's kind of like a eat or be eaten kind of thing, and it's not as I think inviting to kind of be intertwine my entire life with it as much anymore. So that being said, it's I still I'm now on the other end. I think I'm coming back to music with a with kind of like that kind of kid childlike kind of like in like vigor towards things and sound. And now I'm diving a lot deeper back, and instead of kind of being so focused on the forefront, right, of like new, taking more time and going kind of more backwards with it. But so music will always still kind of be intertwined with anything and everything I do. It's like breathing to me. I can't describe my favorite genre to you. It's like that doesn't make sense in my head. It's that kind of thing where it's synopsis with every single facet of like, it's like a limb, you know what I mean? Like you move it. It's like it moves, it changes, but it's like, you never go without it kind of thing.
Yeah, cool. So yeah, let's kind of jump up to more present time. So 2020 hits and things aside and get pretty immersed back into nature. And at that point, did you have like how did the sort of, vision
I
unfold?
think so. Yeah, so it's through my time in LA, even before 2020, like I had a camper van when I was in college. That was my first one, and then I bought one when I moved to LA. And it's funny. Like I've always been kind of known as someone that was doing outdoorsy stuff. I just never really kind of thought about it. It wasn't kind of something that I really leaned into ever. I always kind of felt like, even because where I was working in music, I always felt like my peers are a little bit like, kind of like, what are you doing? You know what I mean? I don't think they really wanted me to. And like the artists I was managing, I think, okay, you're just gonna like go fuck off into the woods for a weekend, like, and I can't reach you. So I think maybe that had a little bit to do with it. Like I was a little maybe too scared, a little nervous to like lean into it fully because of my profession. But come 2020, I was already, very much camping and doing a lot of stuff, but it wasn't something that I was really like showcasing, I would say, in any kind of way. And so with it, doing all the outdoor stuff, and I think, it being kind of like the only thing that was even like available to do, it felt very powerful for me to kind of like take this, what I would consider is like it's an experience that like, it's not, has nothing to do with race, has nothing to do with anything. It's like interacting with nature as a human right. You know what I mean? As far as us existing on this planet, like that to me, I have very deep feelings about how everyone should feel that they have a right to nature and somewhat enjoying it if they want, right? And so that's maybe also why I didn't really feel like it was some special thing. But so when I was doing some of these trips, I think for the first time, I was getting droves of kind of, DMs from people I didn't even really know, maybe some friends as well, but a lot of people I didn't know. And I don't have some huge following or anything, but it was like kind of weird for me to get DM'd by people. And so they were saying things, giving me like long messages about how my travels and just things that I'm doing were like helping them. And I think that was the first time that I kind of just kind of like things kind of slowed down for me, because I don't think being a manager, I've never wanted the spotlight. I've never I was always like I always describe like I was a better like teammate. I'm like Pippen to Jordan. Like I never wanted to be Jordan. It wasn't important. Even like playing football, like I was defense, like I wasn't the quarterback, but I was like, I loved that role because it just felt the most, I guess, the most comfortable for me. And so for anyone to reach out and say some things like that, like no one really ever had, right? And so for me to be doing something that was so personal to me and helping me, like from a mental perspective, physical perspective, just like makes my life feel good. And just doing that naturally without even trying, for the first time, I'm getting hit up by people saying that that is what's inspiring them. Not like the cool stuff that I'm doing on Instagram or like, any of the like LA shit, basically. That was awesome. I loved it. I was just like, wow, like this is so cool. And it made me want to show it more, right? It made me want to do more stuff. And then the more I did it, the more people that were kind of giving me this notion of like, dude, like you're inspiring me. And it was a lot of people that look like me, people of color who, never really felt represented or safe in these types of spaces. And I was connecting with a lot of friends at the time. I have a friend named Brick, Engage is my roommate, and they started this thing called Ebony Beach Club around the same time, which was like a way to get kind of like black surfers like in the water feeling comfortable together. And that was inspiring to me in terms of like just kind of people like us kind of getting outside and just like feeling good about it. You know what I mean? And using just our joy and happiness as a way to inspire instead of kind of like anything preachy or overly like, about anything negative to get people to like, you got to care about this because look what's happening. Especially during that time when like George Floyd and all this stuff, it was just for me to just be doing something that was bringing joy to my heart, and that was what was helping people, was really, really cool. And then on the other side of it, sorry, I'm gonna and on the other side of it, what was weirding me out was that people would hit me up and they'd send this amazing, wow, you're inspiring me message. And then it would always kind of end it with this, I wish I could do that. And that was what would always stick with me. What do you mean you wish you could do this? Like people, especially when it comes from people I know that live where I live, have the same lifestyle I live. I know you're not doing anything because it's COVID, right? And like, so you're not geographically challenged, you're not financially challenged, you're not time challenged. Like you, like, man, I wish I could do that. I could never do that. Or like, you can do it, but I can't. And I'm just like, well, what in the world do they mean? And that really started to kind of stick with me, and I couldn't shake it. I couldn't shake the, I wish I could do this. And I was like, well, what makes me, where is this invisible wall that makes me on this side and puts them on that side? What are the bricks that have built this wall for that person? And why to them do I feel like I'm on this side? And why am I on this side? And just like it, through traveling a lot alone over that time, I spent a lot of months in like trips really trying to break that down. And like basically that solving that problem was what Usul is and is, I mean, it's progressed, but that was like just what I wanted to do. I wanted to solve that problem, that of like someone saying, I wish I could do that, And so that was really, and to me, I can go into what I kind of have realized what those kind of bricks that make that wall are, and kind of, why I've kind of felt comfortable enough to be on this side of that fence. And I think what people need to get to this side. But that was really kind of what led me to want to start Usul.
Yeah, that's beautiful.
Yeah.
Yeah, thank you for sharing that. And I'm definitely curious to hear.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, and it's still something that I still try to define, today. And it's something that as starting Usul, it's gotten clear. You know what I mean? Like, you really, for anyone that wants to start anything, it's like, what I've realized is you have this idea of it in your head, but it's never going to just be that idea. Like, you just have to do it and fail and or whatever and just watch it grow. It's a plant, it's not going to be its full, beautiful, self. When you first plant that seed, you have to like water it. You have to watch it. You got to see, okay, maybe that's not the right light for it. Let's move it around the house. Like you have to play. You got to have fun with it. And I think Through a lot of that in the past year, I've been able to kind of like, and still, I don't know what this hole is. It's still, ever changing. I still can't describe it in like one sentence. Like, it's, and I don't really know if that's a bad thing. I think it's fun for it to kind of be multifaceted and just, somewhat of an idea. I know all the investors, they want to, they tell me that's not the best, but I think it's fun to like just have, just kind of keep it ambiguous a bit, right? So, but anyway, back to kind of that moment of, or those moments early on, especially of trying to figure out an answer to, what I was kind of getting reached out to, which was this kind of idea that, people, these people felt they weren't able to do this, right? And so, to me, there's three main things, and there's a few others, but for in terms of that wall that was between us, I think that the three main things were, the first one is clearly, education, the lack thereof, education around learning new hobbies, especially outdoor hobbies. Most people, especially if you're not, male and white, you did not grow up, especially if you grew up in an urban area, like you didn't grow up in a place where it was accessible to, to have access to learning how to fly fish, to learning, what climbing was, or the, or these types of things. Like it just wasn't in your community. That's another thing. But the main thing was, it's just, right then and there, like if I wanted to go online, I did. I would do like, I'd like try to like, do a little research and like, okay, I want to learn how to forage. And that was something that I, was also was a big thing, reason why I wanted to start Usul, because there were things that I wanted to learn, right? And so I was like, well, where can I go to learn how to forage in LA? And this big, this massive city, and you're going to tell me like, there's nowhere I can find this. And it's like, I literally searched, I would search hours, I couldn't find anything. And then as it comes to like the more basic kind of, not basic, but the more kind of like, I guess, general types of activities like backpacking or surf lessons or things like that, which, there are out there. I think what I was finding with people was like, there's either this one end where it's like the REI class that is so scary for most people, in the sense of them not feeling like that's gonna, they're gonna feel accepted. They're probably like going to feel very scared and intimidated by the other people that are there because they don't know what that community, REI community, is like, and they might feel like, they're going to be judged by, how beginner they are at something. So that's kind of one end, is like the kind of, maybe it's extreme, let's call it extreme end, that, most people didn't really, especially beginners, obviously don't fit in. And then the other end is like, a lot of these people, they're not going to go, what are they going to go on, like Airbnb experiences and book like a surf class? Like it's, that's not fun either. Like there's, for other reasons, that's just like too GA. It's too general. It's too, the pool is too wide, right? And it's like, where's the curation? And there wasn't any around intentional, accessible intro. And I think that, you know what I mean? It's like, here's a curated, like really kind of, not really intense, but like it's still, like it's still scary. Like I don't even know if I would do an REI class at this point, so it's, there's that, but there wasn't really a platform, an aggregative like grouping of things that felt, oh, I can learn how to go fly fish around a bunch of other beginners, but like it's all, and it's built in this way where it's going to be like, intentional and more about like the experience and not just about catching fish. Because like, I always use the example of like when you go like, on a fishing trip, you find a fishing guide, so you go to Florida, his, that guide, he just, he could care less about if you're going to go and fish ever in your life again. It's just about getting you out there, catching a fish. You caught a fish, okay, great, let's go back. It's not, there's no connection to why did it, why does he fish, where is, you know what I mean, what is it's, so it's like what we're tr what we're about is like, it's not like the top of the mountain. It's like, what is it, the process of getting there? Like, what is that? What is that like? Like, how does that define you? And how does that relate to your life back, in your home, in your work, in your place? It's like, that's the connection to nature that we're teaching, is just, not, it's not about catching the fish. It's about like the kind of whys, like why do we do these things that, somewhat are hard on our bodies or take our time or pull us away from the city. What are the reasons? And finding people that are interested in telling that story is really the type of people that, we try to kind of work with, essentially. And yeah, and so the first kind of pillar of reasons why I think a lot of people weren't feeling like they could do these activities was the one, kind of a safe, accessible, and kind of accepting place to learn. I think two was a more obvious one, gear. So I think the thing with gear is, the way I say it is that if like someone's at A and to get to C, which is doing the activity, they have to do B, which is buy gear, and you've never done something, it's ridiculous. You know what I mean? And it's like you're going to spend thousands of dollars on a bunch of gear for an activity that you might not like. Like any sane person is going to tell you that is absolutely like ridiculous, you know? And so what do people do when they've never done an activity? How do they get around that? They have a friend. What do a lot of people in urban communities not have? A friend that has done that before, right? Or a family member. A lot of people don't have that, you know? And so why a lot of these, outdoor experiences mainly stay in the kind of white thing? It's not that they're like gatekeeping. It's just like, there it is. That's why. It's like family members teach other family members, friends, hey, come with me, use my gear. It's like you gotta have money to do these things, right? So if you don't have the money, if you don't have friends that'll lend you the gear, you're definitely not gonna go out there and buy a bunch of gear just to try something. And so if B is buying gear to try something, to me it's like what we're trying to do is switch that around. C should be where B is, and B should be where C is. So try it first, then buy gear. You know what I mean? Try be have an opportunity to try it using, we work with a lot of companies that will donate gear to us, or we'll do gear swaps where we allow people to kind of come and buy gear for used for cheap. We have a forum where if we're doing an event, so, hey, I have an extra sleeping bag. I have this, just helping people be able to do it. So that then, okay, and oh, and then also, so they have a little bit of understanding of what they want to buy. Obviously, like, no, REI isn't out there to kind of like be like, no, you only really need this. Like, when you step in that store, they're going to make you buy the nicest thing possible, and you're going to walk out spending way more than you ever imagined, because it's like candy store. I mean, I it happens to me too. Like, it's a hard place to not spend, hundreds of dollars in. And so yeah, it's just like, yeah, gear etiquette. And like no literacy, right? It's just like these are all things that, these stores aren't, they don't care about, and so gear is another big reason why people aren't getting into these activities. And then the last one is community. It's the main thing is you're not going to do these things alone. You're not going to do it if you don't feel accepted into that community to do it. And so for us, it's like we've seen, a lot of, I think traditionally, people that traditionally have felt basically represented, feel, somewhat for the first time, represented in the USOL kind of like ecosystem. And mainly that goes into gender. Women by far, our events skew women. So it's like a 56, 57, 58%, gender from male to female. Our events, you women, and not only does that make me so proud, but it makes sense if you think about it. It's like if we're an intro level like platform that are creating opportunities that are accessible and relatively cheap to join in on, of course the first people that are going to be there are people that never really had that. I would say most men not only probably have more opportunities through their friends to do these outdoors activities with, but they also are a little bit more kind of like gung ho on just doing it by themselves. You know what I mean? It's a little less, they're a little bit like, I can go out in the wilderness and just go do it. For a woman, it's not safe at all. You know what I mean? So I think there's, especially if you've never done something. So I think there is, a real merit to, us building this platform and seeing, like I said, kind of like testing and not really knowing, but seeing, oh, wow, that makes sense, So to me, those were the three things that we were trying to break down with USOL. And then for someone to feel comfortable, I think those are three big ones. And then for me, and what I was really like when I kind of look back at like, okay, why am I on this side of the fence? Let me think about that. Like, why, what got me here, And it was really looking back, it's like, man, like I've been lucky to have enough to have people in my life that were friends that were pretty much just glorified guides in these moments, whether it was taking me backpacking for the first time, whether it was taking me fishing, whether it was this. And people that have showed me these activities, but not only that, but show me how much they love them and how much joy it brings them. That's what got me into wanting to do it. You know what I mean? And that's what led me to wanting to go buy the gear, wanting to go, like, do it on my own. It was people in my life that were just friends, weren't they didn't make me feel, overly, bad for not knowing how to do it. I didn't feel like it was like a student teacher role. It didn't feel anything other than like a friend helping a friend. And what that made me realize is that, like, guides can be all shapes and forms. You know what I mean? I think, especially, as it comes to safety, there's without question that there's a line, you know what I mean? That should definitely be represented. But as it comes to this idea that you have to be someone that's done this in their entire life, and you spent every waking second just guiding people, and that's all you do. I honestly think that kind of, I mean, no, I'm not. It's not gonna. I'm not gonna say that. But I guess I find that the people that, don't necessarily do it for a living, have this kind of fresh perspective on the human, like element of what they do, because that's their release. If that makes sense. Then, like, when they get to do that, it's like always a release. It's front or like place of like exhale, instead of it being the, how they make money. And so it's it, they with the way that they teach is drastically different than someone that does it to make money, in my experience. And so and I think that is how, and I think that's what I realize is what people connect with, is they connect with the person, like, oh wait, so you work at a creative agency, and you've done this, your dad taught you how to do this, and so you just do it, and it makes you, and you can do it in LA, and you do it because it brings you like happiness. I can do that, and so I think that is a little easier to connect with than the kind of, hey, I grew up doing this, done this my whole life, so let's do it. And it's like, okay, well, that's great. It's probably gonna be a great experience, but, like, I don't know if I'm gonna have that connection with me doing this after this hour, 2 hour class is over, which is like, that's our goal. Like, we're trying to make it so that, like, within those 2 hours, we're not gonna teach you absolutely everything there is to know. There's no chance. There's no way you can do that. However, what we hope to teach you is, that you leave with a curiosity of whether it's that specific activity, or whether it's just like having your mind a little bit more widely open to the idea of bringing these types of activities in your life, and how that can help you, as you live in somewhere like a city like LA.
Yeah. No, that's super interesting. And yeah, I think just like the time you've spent, thinking about this and exploring it is obviously proved very insightful. And yeah, I think like you mentioned, like somebody does it for a living versus somebody who does it for their hobby, it's a different energy. And people are
Yeah,
gonna
and it's not to say that it's bad, like someone at all is bad, and I want to make sure I say that. I just think that, for a long time, there's been kind of a bit of gatekeeping around, like, who can guide and who is a guide, and it's made people feel like, people that very much so could be feel like they could never be, because they don't do it for a living. And I just think that is kind of archaic. You know what I mean? Like, for instance, just to put it in like layman's terms, like a TikTok star can, like, go on and make like something video wise. Just because they're not in like an Oscar film doesn't mean that they can't, have a place. You know what I mean? So it's like, you don't have to just, I studied this, I went to school, this is what I do. It's, a lot of people that, are doing things that didn't go, especially these days, that didn't go around about it in a way where, they dedicated their entire life to kind of like that process. They kind of came at it in a more kind of like, I found this in this kind of way, and this is why it helps me kind of way. And I think there's, yeah, it's just acknowledging that there's room for that type of guidance as well. And I think it's made it, and that's what's made it kind of nice too. It's what we're, our guides tend to be, within our generation. And I think, like, a lot of nature kind of, courses, guidance, that kind of stuff, it very much drastically is older, an older, our parents' age kind of thing. That especially that's kind of also what's in people's heads. So for us to be able to kind of like help people realize that no, these people are just like you, people that we are, employing and having lead these things. They also live in LA. They also, go to the same restaurants as you. They hang out with the same type of people, listen to the same music. It doesn't have to feel so like, again, just back to like being able to relate with that person. And these are things I've heard also. I have friends who have done Outward Bound and programs like that, and who have guided those kind of scenarios, and like from their experiences with inner city Black children who they like get partnered with to take out to the city. It's like they like my friend, he was telling me like he always knows that like no matter what, like he's always going to be seen as like a teacher or a parent in their eyes, and they're never going to be able to kind of like get past that, like that it's he's it, because they're not able to relate with him in that way, because they only have and only white people in their world are either like I said, like a teacher or a cop or someone, someone in like that kind of lane. Like it was that he said the issue was that, there wasn't anyone like that leading it that was representing them in that kind of way. And that's just an example of like just like what I'm trying to do with USOL. It's like we need to make sure that the people leading these things are representing the people that are coming. There has to be that correlation, because without it, to me, it just doesn't make as much sense.
Yeah, that's interesting. Yeah, like more, it's got to be like peer, like a peer relation. That like separation of like an authority figure, I guess.
I mean, I think as we get older, it's like it's less important. I see it very much so for kids, though, that that authority, being able to kind of like befriend whoever that is, whether it's a teacher or a parent, in a way where like they can kind of see past that. I think that's when you really start to see change, and like I think education and kind of like that kind of stuff kind of progress.
Yeah. Well, it's funny, like, the camping references. For me, like, I didn't grow up camping, fishing, those types of things. So even me as like a white man, who's got the safety and privilege, I'm like, shit, I don't know how to set up a tent. Am I gonna go get no? Like, I had to find a friend to help me too, but I can only imagine, like, remove like the community I grow up in, or a woman or a girl or whatever. And there's so many more potential barriers. But like, even for you to like lower some of those barriers or make them not feel as scary, there's still a huge step from somebody to see you doing it to be like, okay, maybe I can do that. So I'm curious, like, what were the first couple like events or workshops that you did?
Well, the first events that we did were we partnered with Arc'teryx, the LA Arc'teryx store, who has a really cool community, and they kind of caught, I was hanging out with them at the time, and they kind of caught wind that I was going to be starting soon. And I was just kind of, they're like, well, we're doing this Earth Day thing and we need to partner on events. Will you be ready by then? And I absolutely wasn't going to be ready, when I was like, sure, yeah, I'll be ready. Just because of the opportunity was seemed like a good one to be able to launch alongside Earth Day with them. And so we kind of rushed everything to get it ready. And those were, we first did, it was a foraging event. And then we did a geology climbing hike, kind of partnered with a archaeologist to kind of discuss what people climb, the type of rocks you see, that kind of thing. What's funny is like really what we saw, or what I even still to this day, it's like these events, it's like what really people are getting out of it is like relearning how to be in groups and how to be around people they don't know. It's so funny. Like, and that really is what is a deciding factor for a lot of people that don't come. It's not that they don't want to come, it's that they're scared. They're scared to meet other people. And so like we're like also like now, again, back to like trial and error, like doing these things, like we're also kind of looped into USOL as this kind of like re-teaching like human connection kind of thing. So we're connecting to nature, but nature's the backdrop to like people being like comfortable again to connect with people they don't know, and especially coming out of COVID, right? And like especially living in a city like LA, which is so like spread out, you know, I think like people find it really hard, and it's like it's scary for them to open up, and it's like you could see the agitation, and you know, but with it, I've also seen like them get better at it, and then I've also seen friendships, and I've also seen like real friendships, like best friendships, like come through from Muson events that we throw, and so it's like that has been kind of a cherry on top, you know, something that you don't go into, you know, doing starting it with, you know, the kind of like idea that that is going to be a big part of it, but it's really cool to see people feel safe and kind of accepted in these spaces. I think nature is a really amazing place to do it. You know what I mean? Different than like a dinner party. It's different than a party. You know what I mean? It's a really awesome place. It's where I feel the most curious. You know, it's like when you're in nature, you really can just kind of like feel a little less kind of judged, you know, and I think, you know, with groups, there's still, you know, there's a fear there, but I think, you know, especially going on a camping trip, for instance, like you're with people for 2 days, and you do make like really close relationships, and it's really, you know, it's a really hot, it's like a hotbed way to kind of jump start, you know, new friendships is coming to kind of USOL events. But to go back to your question, like, yeah, to start, it was just kind of seeing people kind of like take off the cobwebs, you know, of like, hey, what's your name? I don't know how to like interact, you know. It was like kind of like cute, you know. I was like, oh, like this is funny.
Bunch of like
Yeah,
children and adult bodies.
it's like we like everyone had to relearn how to play again.
I mean, what a beautiful like bonus thing to come out of these experiences with people and you know, re-engaging. And yeah, it makes a lot of sense though that like, you know, nature is a place where just naturally your nervous system can, there's an invitation for it to like regulate a little bit more. And so to go into that environment and be like, okay, yeah, I can like meet new people and share this experience. And it's not surprising to hear that a lot of friendships will come out of that.
Yeah, it's been the most rewarding part of it, and it's what, you know, makes me excited about moving forward. And I think, like, you know, we're still kind of getting our bearings on what we want to be. Okay, like, do we want to make product? What product do we want to make? You know, we just got a new space, like a space. I was working out of the office or my house, which was in my friend, like the bedroom, and I just had my friend move in, and so we were able to. I was basically just able to use that money to get, you know, a space for relatively cheap in an area that really made sense for us. It was really good score, and so now we're able to work out of here, have somewhat of a brick and mortar downstairs, and then do events from it. And that's going to open up a whole new kind of lane for us, you know, this year in terms of kind of like, you know, with last year not really having a space to kind of congregate around and having somewhat of a clubhouse environment for this community to kind of be able to feel, you know, feel like they can come at any time. I think will open up a lot of opportunities and kind of new ideas and how we where we want to kind of take it. And yeah, and just kind of being able to continue on the path of doing these events and trying to kind of like, you know, maybe not do more, but make kind of what we do more special, if that makes sense. So I don't think, yeah, I'm not really too focused on like just kind of scaling the amount of classes we're doing and make that such a like part of the quote unquote business. You know, for me, it's more just about making sure that we can keep these classes cheap and that we can make sure that we're doing each one, but like make it, you know, intentional and special and be able to partner with other, you know, companies, organizations in a way where they help us do that. To me is really what the goal is of this year. And then, you know, maybe pushing towards some of the product stuff that we've been interested in kind of tackling and those kind of dream lists, trying to kind of maybe you know, reach this year a little bit. But you know, still in the stage of just kind of figuring it out.
Yeah. Well, it sounds like you're in a great place in terms of like kind of surrendering to that process. You know, there was an original vision, and like you said, like the seed has been planted and it's growing, and you don't know, you know, if it's going to be a hot summer, if it's going to need more water, a storm's going to come along, and like you
Right,
just going
yeah.
with that flow and seeing what people respond to and seeing what like sparks a new idea. And I think ultimately it's hard, I think, to do that, right? It's hard to be kind of surrendered to going where you don't have this definite plan, and you get this step and then that step and this amount of money and that thing. But to allow for that sort of fluidity is really cool.
Totally.
So you mentioned like keeping the classes cheap, and something that like I've noticed is like places are gonna, you know, and you know, especially since like 2020, 21, when a lot of like race stuff exploded in the US, you know, a lot of brands are using Black, mixed, and Asian people in campaigns, and a lot of places are being like, we're an inclusive whatever, but it's still like $250 to go there. It's like, okay, so you're not gonna like reject somebody if they're Black, but it's not inclusive in terms of like being affordable. And it seems like something that is a big part of what you're doing is like keeping that like barrier for entry as.
Yeah, and it's, I mean, to me, I was just looking at some of the price points of certain things that were in the space already, and I was just kind of asking why. Why is this expensive? You know, why, like, who decided this? You know, it just felt like it wasn't usually based off of, like, you know, some things make sense with like a meal where it's like, you know, it's like you're paying for the production, you're paying for the ingredients, you're paying for this, but like spending that type of money like at a certain restaurant versus another restaurant, okay, that makes sense. Clear why this one's more expensive and this one's less. But when it comes to like guiding, I think, you know, a lot of these and like these travel kind of companies, they just pick a price. You know, it just felt like they were, you know, it was just like assume that this is a standard. It's gonna like break your bank, you know, essentially to have a outdoor nature experience. And a lot of them preach, or a lot of them don't preach what we do, which is, you know, they kind of have like take this retreat destination to Bali, and this is where you can have this kind of connection to nature here. Come here to like breathe fresh air. And for us, it's just kind of like we want to stay local and kind of preach this idea of traveling local. One, it's just, I think, better for the environment. But two, it's like makes you reclaim where you live in a way you feel proud about it. And you're like, you know, I live in LA and I do this, and that is cool. And I don't need, you know, to leave. Like this, that makes me feel more inspired and happy about where I live if I'm doing these types of activities here. So that being said, that helps keep things cheap, is if we can keep, you know, production like side of things low. If we're doing things in outdoor spaces, if people are able to drive their own cars to get there, you know, LA is a very, you know, that's really good thing about LA is people have cars. You know, if we were to start this thing in New York, it'd be a little bit of a different story, right? So just being able to like tap into like what this city kind of is, and just be able to try to keep the prices around just purely, you know, these guides and independent kind of like contractors that we work with, and understanding, okay, what kind of class do you want to do? You know, what are the resources that you need to produce this class? You know, what kind of price are you looking, or like what are you kind of looking to get out of this from the guiding side? And for us, we keep our percentage super low. So it's like, you know, we're not trying to kind of like make 50% of it. You know, it's like it's nothing like that. So it's like inherently they stay low. And I think a lot of people, you know, look at us as a way like, well, how is that a business model? It's like not gonna last. And I think I'm not trying to have that be the business, is what I tell them. It's like I want this to just be the community builder. Like this is gonna, I want the community to grow. It's not about making a ton of money off these classes. Like that's not, you know, that's not the strategy. I couldn't tell you really what the strategy is, but I just know that isn't, you know, I just know that like as soon as that becomes the need is I think when this the excitement of this kind of dwindles, you know, for me too, you know. So it's like if I can keep them cheap and kind of like lowball all these very hoity-toity types of places, and that to me is cool and exciting. And it's seemingly so, like all the guides we work with, like they're down. Like they're not at no one's like greedy. No one's like, you should be paying way more. Most people are like, this is too expensive, you know, and I have to like be like, we can't go lower. I'm not like me, like we just can't. Like most people are like, can we just make it cheaper? Like I just want people to show up. Like that's really everyone that we work with has no like care about like it being this huge like money kind of like pour in. I think they more so want to just know that like what they're doing and what they love is connecting with others, and that is like, you know, that's huge.
Yeah, that's great. With the guides, is that something that you are finding and reaching out to, or are people hitting you up as well?
It's a little bit of both. I mean, at this point, what's nice is, you know, we get reached out to a lot and by a lot of cool people, and it's always been, you know, from the start, it was started with just word of mouth, you know, in terms of, you know, me meeting someone and then being like, you got to meet this person. Or like, and then we meet that person, do a class with them, and they're like, well, you got my friend does this. You should meet him, you know. So it's cool because it's, I think that's also the most natural way I like to do classes is like through a friend of a friend, you know, not necessarily some just like kind of cold email. I think I don't really cold email. We don't really reach out that much to people we don't already know. It's nine like 80% of like a friend of a friend is introducing us. Oh, I've heard about you. Like, yeah, let's meet kind of thing. And then the other side of it is yeah, is people kind of reaching out in that capacity. But we're always, you know, looking to do new things and keep it fresh and exciting and work with more people. I just think, you know, it's definitely like we try to kind of vet, you know, who we're working with, you know, obviously in a way where it's like making sure our, you know, mission is aligned and how we want to approach the class is aligned. And you know, once we can get there, it's, you know, it's pretty simple and easy to kind of put an event together, and it's pretty low stakes too. It's like, you know, if it doesn't do well, it's not, say a class doesn't really like totally sell out, as long as there's people there, which like we've never really had an event that doesn't like have that kind of scenario. As long as people are, it's always fun, right? So yeah.
Cool. So one of the other things obviously that stood out to me is just the aesthetic of the brand, vibe, the website. You guys have made like lots of little pamphlets, you've made some gear, you just released your most iconic hoodie. I'm curious to know like how like that side of it sort of developed and it has evolved as you've gone to.
Yeah, I mean, what's been great is I've, you know, been blessed with, you know, people to work with as it comes to working in the music industry, working a ton with creative directors throughout my years, from photographers to designers to, you know, everything in between. There was one guy named Chase Shoebridge that, on one of the last artists that I was working with in the music industry, we pretty much hired like for everything early on. I think someone introduced us, and from then on we were just like, you're the guy. He was living in some, I think Virginia, somewhere on the East Coast at the time, and then we like convinced him to move to LA. And so when I was coming up with this kind of concept, before I even started talking about it to anyone, I kind of hit him up and I was just like, hey, I have this idea. Here's kind of like my kind of like brain dump of kind of like aesthetic and kind of where I want to take it. Here's a name. You know, let's do some stuff. So I, you know, had a lot of it in terms of like where we wanted to go with the brand identified way before the launch. Way before I even really knew what USOL was. I knew I had like the branding of it down. And I think that just goes back to my time spent working with artists and building kind of basically like visual palettes for releases. A lot of times you don't have the music done before you do it, or before you can, but you know, you have to kind of build these things while the kind of plane's in the air. Yeah, it was something that, you know, I knew was going to be a big part of this thing is translating not only our message, but what Usul is because of how vast and kind of like somewhat random our events calendar can be. If we're doing ceramics and then climbing and then a falconry class all in one day, where does that live, you know, visually? And it would need very strong visual language to make sense. And you know what I mean? It still maybe doesn't make sense, but it's like that's kind of the method was the method to the madness was having like a having design kind of lead the charge, you know what I mean? And you know, as it comes to kind of the photography and kind of video kind of work that we do, that also kind of play a role into it. But you know, coming up with that, which to me, like, it's kind of a bit hard to describe, but it's this thing where I'm very inspired by you know, kind of taking inspiration from vintage advertisement campaigns of old outdoor brands. So the North Faces, the Patagonias, kind of, you know, even just kind of old, small, like outdoor outfitting kind of companies from the past. And there's a really cool resource somewhere online. I think it's like Utah State has this, had like a, did like, I don't even know if it was a class or maybe it's just a department there, but they have this kind of like really amazing online, like free archive of just a ton of different scans of old advertisements that they have been archiving, collecting. And I just remember sitting for hours looking through them, you know, for months, just kind of like using that as real inspiration. And then on the flip side, and something also Chase is really inspired by just as much as I am, is kind of like mashing that with like scientific kind of futuristic kind of language where it's kind of set in a past, but it's also kind of in this world of research science, kind of like methodical, kind of like that kind of stuff. Because that stuff always, to me, it's like it's not ever trying to be cool. It's just like it's factual. It's like yeah, it's hard to, like I said, it's hard to explain, but to me, you know, that stuff really works well with kind of setting stuff in the past and then giving it this kind of like around that, kind of having the language be very kind of like to the point, kind of in this kind of scientific research kind of lane. Kind of that's kind of where we exist, I would say. And it gives us a place where we're not necessarily trying to like kind of reinvent the wheel each time. Where, you know, we're at the end of the day, like we're a platform and our guides are kind of the, I guess the way that we've talked about it too is like our guides and the classes that we do, like they're the ones that have the kind of like the flair and stuff. And it's like for us, like we're a platform, like, you know, when you go to Google, it's like we're not changing their design every time. You know, it's like you we want to be kind of known for one thing, and when we make merch, we can have fun with it and this and that. But like I think like when you go to our website, it's like, you know, we want to be a little bit more straightforward and almost kind of like a research platform where then like the classes and you know the you know some of the like products that we make, like that can be maybe a little bit more kind of like kind of fun and specialized. But starting from just kind of a place where try to simplify and just kind of keep it, you know, just kind of, I guess, regular.
Yeah. Well, it looks great. Definitely. I think you guys are doing a great job on it. And I can't remember what I was the other day, but I saw somebody wearing like a hoodie and a hat, and I was like, oh yeah, there it is
Hell
in
yeah.
the
Hell
wild.
yeah. That's always good to see. And yeah, and this year we're like really putting a lot more effort into it. I would say like I'm not necessarily super proud about anything we've made yet. I'm sure like a lot of people have that same take when they're making stuff, but I think the stuff that we are currently working towards designing and just kind of putting a lot more thought behind it. So I'm like a lot more proud, I think, with the stuff that we're currently designing. Because I have a little bit more of a team helping me. Shout out Melissa here. But yeah, it's been fun to kind of be more intentional instead of just making, you know, hoodies and stuff like that. It's fun, but let's, you know, I kind of want to get a little bit more intentional with product, if that makes sense.
Yeah, for sure. And you mentioned like partnering with brands to like help keep cost good and support with gear and stuff. How has that side of it been in terms of, getting them on board, understanding the vision and supporting?
Yeah, I mean it's been interesting. We haven't done any kind of official product partnerships with any brands in that kind of way. A lot of the bigger brands have reached out to us, kind of like the names that everyone knows, kind of like not somewhat secretly, as a way to kind of build like research and development on the outdoors and like the state of the outdoor community and where it's going. So we've had like big meetings and Zooms with design teams for brands. They've at one point one brand came to LA and had us do like a like basically get a bunch of people from our community and paid them individually to just like ask them questions, about stuff. So it's like really like a few brands have been kind of, and it's cool because through those scenarios we've gotten really close with their teams, the design teams and this and that, and so it's only going to lead to good things. But I think I've been a little reluctant to want to even like partner with big brands in that way just yet, just because I think, like I said, I'm still trying to figure out what our identity is, and I think I'd only feel really confident doing that when with a especially with like a big brand, when we have that more solidified and kind of like, USALT is a thing, we have a space where we're making our own stuff in a way that it's, being presented in a way that we're, proud of. And then it can feel good to kind of, partner, with the bigger brands. I just think sometimes the collaborations sometimes come a little too early, and can feel like you have to depend on them. And I definitely don't. And I have that same kind of perspective on events. When brands want to partner with on events and stuff, it's like I'm okay with doing it, but I am, because we have this, we do 20 to 25 events on our own every month. We don't need to do brand events to feel, relevant or capable. So like if one of out of 20 events is with a brand, like I'm okay with that. You know what I mean? But like when it comes to the clothing, we've only made like, a handful of things so far. So it's like I think I want to make more stuff, feel like that is more represented and identified, before kind of stepping into like big kind of collaborations. That said, like we're gonna do some collaborations, but more with like friends, like, brands that, are local and, and are kind of fit into our world, because that's fun and like I think represents where we're at.
Yeah, that's cool. I can't help but think about like a collaboration, I'm using air quotes, with like colleges or elementary schools where you are taking this into, you're doing what you're doing, but it's like going into those spaces. I wonder if that's something that you've explored or could be on the horizon.
Yeah, I think definitely on the horizon. I mean, I think the starting young thing, I think, is something that's really cool, because a lot of people that come to our events, they bring their kids, so it's definitely a kid-friendly environment, and seeing like, someone, 40 and then someone 6 like being saying the same thing when they see something like, whoa, like that is, it's fun, as a brat of four, like a four, I think that was like a foraging event we did when there was a few kids, and they're getting exactly the same out of it, like there's no age differentiation on that, it's like there's both, old and young are getting the same out of it. And so, we definitely like toyed around with, maybe within our monthly programming, if we're partnering with someone on a foraging event, for instance, we for each like for a month, we maybe do one more class that is like oriented for like kids, or in some capacity, to like just maybe do two of them, where it's like one's for kids, one for that. I'd love to get in that, because I think it's really cool to see families like do these things together. Whether it's camp trips or this and that, I think like there's something to be said about kind of like getting out of your ordinary routine as a group, as a family, to learn and do something fun together that you're all getting something out of. I think that can be really powerful in kind of and the kind of upbringing for a kid, and understanding, like, for a parent, how they can kind of, just grow together with that kid.
Yeah, it feels like definitely a like a the most impactful version, I guess, of what you're doing, because you're getting the adult into this space, into this connection, and then like the generational change is happening right there, where like that kid isn't gonna have to like learn this when they're 30. You know, they're already gonna be introduced to foraging or climbing or camping or all these things, like, which is very cool.
So I think, like, kids and, obviously working, I think, with inner city, youth communities and finding a way to do that, is definitely, like, on the horizon for us. And, finding those partners is kind of what we're up to right now.
And so I gotta also ask, like, the name, what, where does that come from?
So it's a place. It's a place in northern California, almost probably like 2 hours from Oregon, on the coast. There's a stretch of coastline that's the longest stretch of uninhabited coast that California has, called the Lost Coast, up near kind of Humboldt County. And it's a very famous, coveted backpacking trail, because there's only one trail through, like, 8,000, hundreds or thousands of acres of just pure, untouched, like, nature and trees. One trail goes from the top to the bottom. That's around 22 miles, 23 miles, something like that. And so it's a Lost Coast trail. It goes from the beach up into the mountains, up into the trees, back to the beach. It's just kind of like the craziest looking thing, because it looks like you're in, like, five different landscapes at once, and it's just, like, absurdly lush and beautiful. And at the most southern tip of the Lost Coast Trail, it spits you out into this beach, that is essentially like a dispersed campground. That only way to get to that campground is this one long, windy, which you need like a 4x4 car to do, road, called Usal Road. And then the campground is called Usal Dispersed Beach Campground. And so, I went there and just loved it. I had the best time. I went there alone and over New Year's 1 year, or something like that, for a couple of days. Went back again. I just went back 2 weekends ago for a trip, and it was just a place. And I was definitely inspired by, like, Patagonia, or companies that, like, call the name of their company off of a place that they love. And so I loved Usal, and I loved the name. I thought it sounded cool, and I liked the letters. I like just how the letters look together, and two syllable. It's, just it fit it tapped the boxes for me from an aesthetic point of view, and then also from a personal spiritual point of view. And I think that's what you kind of look for when you're naming something. And most people feel like they can't say it right, but it's fine. Here we are.
Yeah, I'm glad you said it like really early on, so I could.
I mean, it's funny. Everyone's like, "Yeah, so I love." Wait, how do you say it? Can you just tell me? I'm like, "Yeah, I say Usal." Some people say Usal. The only thing I do not permit, and I will tell you, it's not, is just people say usual. I'm just like, usual, really? Usual? Like,
That's funny.
no, it's not it. So that's not really the only time I'll correct someone.
That's funny. So it sounds like you spend a decent amount of time alone, like doing these trips and exploring. And I think that's awesome. And I think most adult human beings don't spend enough time alone. We can learn so much about ourselves, our world. You know, there's a certain space that's created there. I'm curious, like, when you're on those trips, obviously you're, engaged with your environment from what I can tell. But beyond that, like, are you reading certain things? Are you meditating? Like, are there other practices that you incorporate into trips?
No, absolutely. I mean, I think it's a lot of reflection time for me. I'm not reading, but I'm writing. So I'm reflecting, I'm journaling, meditating, to some capacity. I wouldn't say it'd be, too deep in those, and going into internal and in the kind of meditation side of things. But a lot of time spent, when you're on a trail, like for me, it's like I do these. I'll go drive alone to somewhere like Usal, and then I'll do like a backpack, and go camp somewhere for a night or two. And so a lot of time is spent, walking and being in nature, and that's where I feel like my thoughts are the most like free to do whatever they want to do, and like there's nothing stopping me to from having just being able to think, just deeply and also creatively, and also like, maybe it's emotions that are sad. Like it doesn't have to always be about creativity, it can be just working through things, but I try to go into them without like any kind of like expectation. Like I'm not like I gotta go here and like think about this. Like it's not, that's not it. It's more so I just want to put myself in there and then let whatever come up, and kind of like allow kind of like, that experience to just to be present in that experience, and then just kind of like use it, not 100 times out of 100 to my advantage. I always come out, I've never come out of those experiences like, wow, that didn't help me in some kind of way.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's great. Awesome. Well, I don't know if I have any other questions right now, but thank you so
Sweet.
much for
Well,
sharing.
no, man, that was awesome for me. Felt good to talk about that stuff. So thank you for having me.
Yeah, definitely. Well, we've been a bit stuck out here in our house with our little baby and everything going on, but definitely gonna make a point of coming and checking out some
Please
classes.
do. Please do. We're doing a little trail run event later this month with Rio, and gonna make that monthly. So if you're in the running mood, come out to that. I'm currently training for my second marathon, the LA Marathon. So
Nice.
get it in shape again. And actually, the first time I didn't train, so that was more so just like, I just wanted chaos. So I definitely got what I asked for. I was injured for quite a long time after that. So this time I spent a lot more time getting in shape for it. So I'm excited. So looking forward to running with you and doing more stuff like that.
Yeah, so that's just over a month away now, right?
Yeah. Getting into the gritty hours.
Yeah, a good friend of mine was he's training for it and did 20 miles I think on the weekend, and I'm like, oh man, I'm in a full like break mode myself, so that's
Yeah.
intense.
Yeah, even that, I mean, every time I do even one more than I'm like used to. Like I did 15 like last weekend, and even that was just like, dude, this is hard. So it's like it hasn't gotten easier at all, but it's just like knowing my body's not gonna break down is really just all I want to know.
Yeah.
Like mentally, like it's gonna suck no matter what, but it's just like I don't want to be injured. You know what I mean? So it's like that's all I'm trying to like figure out.
Cool. Well,
Yeah.
good luck. I'll be definitely
Thank
interested
you.
in how it goes.
Yeah, sweet man. We'll get in touch soon.
Yeah, definitely. Thank you so much.
Sweet, thanks.